Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
It is that time of week again. Welcome into the Believe in NBA Prospects show. I am your host, Eric Rubenstein. Across from me, as always, is my ever so lovely co-host, Michael Maxey, here on the Believe Podcast Network in partnership with Up and Under NBA Network. But guess what, Michael? We have programming news for the people at home who might not be too familiar with me. I host a couple different podcasts on the Nothing But Net Dash Radio channel. Michael, we have gone national. We are now officially part of the Nothing But Net Dash Radio channel. You guys can check us out at 11 a.m. Central Time on the Dash Radio NBA channel. We went national, Michael. We did it. We're big time.
That is exciting. That's very exciting.
One of only two draft shows that Nothing But Net throws up on there. So we are in a elite category here, Michael. So we have to do our people proud for our debut episode.
Oh, I think we'll be fine. I think we have.
Yeah, for sure. And today, for the people at home, another small programming note. Today, we're going to keep it a little bit shorter, only 30 minutes today. We're going to do risers and fallers today ahead of Selection Sunday. And then next week, we'll do a little bit longer of a show because Selection Sunday comes up, obviously, this Sunday. So we will be going through 20 to 25 prospects for you guys to watch out for during March Madness. I know that's kind of my whole thing when it comes to March Madness. I don't know about you, Michael, but I'm all about the draft when March Madness begins. So we'll give a couple names for the people at home.
Absolutely. March Madness to me is just basically a precursor for the start of these players starting to build their draft stock. Mm. And I watch college basketball way differently than everyone else. It's kind of hard to watch it with my friends because all I'm looking at is draft prospects.
But thank God, Michael. Thank God that Murray State ended up beating Belmont in the championship of the Ohio Valley Championship, because now we get Ja Morant in the tournament. Thank goodness. Ugh, we almost didn't get Ja Morant. That might have been
the best thing to happen. Oh, I know. And then I have a friend who knows the Wilder kid from Belmont, and I'm like, oh no, we need Ja Morant in. Oh yeah, this is big. Yeah,
it's gonna be huge.
I'm happy about it.
So guys, we are going to do our risers and fallers today. Basically, we're gonna go through about four risers and four fallers from the past week or so of games. The tournaments are done or about to be done here in the next couple days. So, without further ado, let's get into our first riser. And I think the biggest riser maybe of the college basketball season at large, outside of Ja Morant, Coby White, who has, in very short time, gone from like maybe late first round prospect to kind of middling first rounder to, I don't think he makes it past the lottery. And if he does, I will be stunned.
I agree with you 100%, Harris. Coby White was a guy who, you know, he came into North Carolina as kind of like overshadowed by Nasir Little, and now he has become one of the best freshmen in the nation. I definitely think I could see him even maybe getting himself into a lottery. He's just he's a combo guard, but he's running the point for North Carolina. He's doing a fantastic job. He's so versatile. I just really like his game.
And also, it can't be ignored, Michael. That hair instantly makes him a more likable NBA prospect. I don't care what anyone says. When you got hair like that, you are instantly someone that people are going to be watching. But in that game against Duke, you know, RJ Barrett's on the floor. Cam Reddish is on the floor. Trey Jones is on the floor. UNC had already beaten Duke once that year. And Coby White was the best player on the floor for either team, to kind of a point where I was stunned that he didn't come into the season ranked higher. Like, he was clearly better. Or not clearly better. He was clearly more comfortable than RJ Barrett or Cam Reddish, at least when it comes to shooting the ball.
He definitely looks like he's under control. He looks like his jumper has improved as the season's gone on. He looks smooth, and I really think that's. I mean, the scouts are going to see this. They're going to see all of his intangibles that don't go up on the on the stat sheet. And I think I really think his stock has rose more than any player since the beginning of the year to now.
I agree, and also I mentioned the hair. I will say this also about Coby White. And I've told this to you before, Michael, so I'll stay consistent. I love college prospects who show up in big games. I like big game players. If you perform well in big games in the NBA or in college basketball, you're going to perform well in big games in the NBA. And Coby White, in every single big game that the Tar Heels have had this year, plus two games against Duke, he has shown up, shown out, and arguably been the best player on the court for UNC in every big game that they've had this year. That's the kind of stuff I like to see out of a lottery pick.
Absolutely. You're right. You want to see him against the best players. The way he played against Duke, the way he's played against in other big games, throughout the whole ACC season, he has been a prime-time player. He has gotten up for the better teams, and he's been consistent. And you know what? He's even had a couple games where he's carried the Tar Heels on his back. I don't know how all this translates to the NBA, but I think he's worth taking a shot, maybe just outside the lottery or definitely in the mid-teens.
If he can get UNC to the Final Four, I would not be surprised if he goes top 10. I just wouldn't. I think he'll end up replacing Nickel Alexander Walker as like the top shooter taken in the lottery. Like everyone keeps mocking, Nickel Alexander Walker to the Pistons. I feel like Coby White will take over that slot in the top 15 if he continues to play the way he has been.
I don't see why he wouldn't. He's going to get a lot. He's going to get a lot of looks in that area.
That's fair. So, Michael, another riser. We're going to keep it on the rise here. Now, this is a guy who you've actually thrown a couple barbs at, but I'm going to stand up for my guy. You know who a riser is? Jackson Hayes from Texas.
Yeah.
Why? Got named Big 12 Freshman of the Year, was named to the Big 12 All-Defense Team. He was All-Big 12 Second Team in general, was part of the All-Newcomer Team. By the way, here's a little fun factoid. Here is the length of former Texas Longhorns to win Freshman of the Year. TJ Ford, Daniel Gibson, I don't know who the heck those dudes are, but the three next ones are big time. Kevin Durant, Tristan Thompson, and Miles Turner are the last three guys to win that award for Texas. Now, obviously, he's a completely different player than all three of those guys. Maybe Tristan Thompson is kind of remotely the one he's closer to. People love to throw him around with Miles Turner. If you watch them play basketball, they play the center position in almost completely different ways. But Jackson Hayes, to me, is a guy who I feel like everyone in the NBA keeps waiting to devalue because he's a rim-running center. But he just keeps playing so well. He's so long. He's so tall. And he's also one of the youngest players in this year's draft. I am standing by this. I have said this multiple times. Jackson Hayes is a top 10 pick. And I think he solidified it with the end of the year for Texas.
He did have a big end of the year. I think he shot like 7 of 9 or something crazy, 9 of 11 or something in his last game. But I'm telling you right now, I would not take him in the top 10. I got to see more out of him. I mean, I understand he's young and everything. And I understand that, that just tells you how awful the freshman class in the Big 12 is if he's winning freshman of the year. I mean, seriously, I mean, he's a nice player. I think he can adapt defensively, into the way the NBA is. I have not seen his offensive game really evolve. I know he's got he's thunderous dunks and stuff like that. I'd like to see a little bit more maybe pop, a little bit more mid-range shots. But you're probably right. He's probably going to be a top 10 pick, or if not, just outside the top 10. And, he has played much better in the last couple games, and I'd like to see how he progresses in the postseason.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to a couple fallers now. So we got two of our four risers. Let's get two of our fallers here. So Coby White and Jackson Hayes are our two risers. Our two fallers, one of them is Cam Reddish. Now, I want to go back to the big game argument I brought up to you before, that I want to see my guys show up in big games. Cam Reddish now, multiple big games across the entire season for Duke, has shot like hell. That dude cannot shoot the ball. He just can't. I don't know what happened to his jump shot. I don't know if he's trying too hard. He can no longer shoot the ball. To me, I think he's actually been the most disappointing NBA draft prospect this year. I thought he had such a potential to take over this Duke team. And not only has he fallen to like the third option, you can make an argument he's even the fourth option on this team because he can't shoot the ball.
I agree with you 100%. And the sad thing is, we all keep him in the top five because we all think he's a stud, and he has been. You're right. He has been such a disappointment, and I keep waiting for him to have that game. Yeah, he hit that big shot against Virginia. Yeah, he's had a couple 20-point games. He has looked okay with Zion Williamson, you know, sideline. But he's got to step up in the tournament. If he doesn't step on the tournament, I could see him falling definitely outside the top five for sure.
I mean, you say like Cam Reddish has had a couple 20-point games. I mean, between you, me, and the big man upstairs, Michael, for the guy who's, you know, ranked number three in the country going to Duke, if he isn't dropping at least like four or five games in one season with 20 points, then like what are we doing here? Like, good Lord, I hope he can drop that many points in a college basketball game.
Well, I mean, is he
just Josh Jackson 2.0?
Well, the sad thing is Josh Jackson had a good tournament, and I actually was debating if he was better than Jason Tatum. And then I obviously watched a little bit more Jason Tatum. I'm like, nah, Tatum's a better player. But, you know, that's just what Josh Jackson was bringing. But, like, Cam Reddish came into college as the best shooter in this class for Duke. And he is – I mean, he had a 1-for-11 game. He's had multiple games where he has just shot garbage. And I don't get it because all the pressure and all the attention is on Zion Williamson and R.J. Barrett. This is a perfect time for him to explode. I mean, he's getting the third best defender on him every game, and he can't put up better stats than that. I think he does look like a pro. He does. He's got the size, the ability, you know, or the looks the part. But, man, if that jumper don't start going, he's just basically an NBA-looking dude with no jumper, you know?
Mm-hmm. And speaking of an NBA dude with maybe no jumper, our next faller is another guy from Duke. I know that the team in general has been great this year, but we're heading into the tournament. I am so afraid to put the tag on him. Is RJ Barrett Andrew Wiggins?
God, I hope not.
I'm worried. Like, every time I watch RJ Barrett and then I go back and watch Andrew Wiggins at Kansas, I feel like I'm watching the same player. I just over and over and over again, the shooting, the driving, the lack of aggressiveness, the kind of inconsistency on defense. He hints a lot towards Andrew Wiggins, which is the exact opposite way that you want him to go. You want him to go Paul George. You don't want him to go Andrew Wiggins.
Absolutely. And I do agree with you to a certain point. And up until this year, Andrew Wiggins, I don't know what happened. He like took a major, he like hit a mountain or something and fell. I don't know, because he is like this is not the same player that was drafted. So, you know, I'm hoping that RJ Barrett's got a little bit more drive, a little bit more, aggressiveness. You know, I see the body language. I know what you're saying. I am very high on RJ Barrett, and maybe that's keeping me from swaying towards the Andrew Wiggins. I was high on Andrew Wiggins too. So, I mean, but I get what you're saying. And I think you're going to see RJ Barrett blow up in this tournament. And I think Duke is a Final Four team. So I
still also think Duke's a Final Four team for what it's worth.
and I think the sad thing is Zion Williamson gets all the publicity, all the credit let's be honest, RJ, he carried him a couple games with Zion in the roster. So I mean, Zion Williamson gets all the accolades, but I think RJ Barrett's just a good enough player, and I think he's had just a good enough freshman season as Zion Williamson did.
Yeah, and I think the kind of I agree with you that RJ Barrett's season in total is probably what we expected from him. I wanted him to be a little bit more aggressive. Like there are some athletes when they play college basketball, when you watch them, this is one of the problems I have with Tatum when he was at Duke, and one of the problems I still have with Tatum in the NBA. You're watching these guys and you want to scream at your TV, RJ Barrett, you are more athletic than every single person in that arena. Go to the hoop. Dunk on somebody. They can't stop you. Tatum is the exact same way. You are 6'9 and longer than every other forward you're going up against. Throw the ball down on somebody. That's my problem with Barrett. I feel like he's just been a little bit too timid this year and hasn't really dominated. Like, he should be owning these poor kids. Like, I remember watching his high school highlights, just some of the All-American games he was playing in, some of the different All-Star games he was playing in. He would straight up fool some of these kids, man. Like, he would just take them to the laundromat. And in college so far, I just haven't seen it yet. Now, his shooting has been good this year. His points per game is still fantastic. I just want to see, like, I wish he would just, like, punch a dude in the face. Like, get some fire going. Like, let's see some passion out there, man. I don't know. It's just a small thing.
Yeah, I really, it's so hard because you don't expect a player like Andrew Wiggins, who was very passive but still put up way good numbers across the board and had a phenomenal rookie season, and even in the second year. It wasn't until he got the big contract where he basically hit the
stop trying.
Yeah. Well, that's what it looks like to the eyes. And I just hope that I'd like to think that these players won't do that, and RJ Barrett being one of them. He's basically been double teamed because they know Cam Reddish can't shoot the ball since Zion Williamson. Mm-hmm. Since Zion Williamson's been out, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, but what I love about his game is, though, he is – when Trey Jones was out, he played point guard. When Zion Williamson's out, he's played some four. He's got a lot of rebounds. He has done a lot of dirty work for Duke because of injuries, because of roster, rotation, limitations, foul trouble, whatever. And I think that's going to show his versatility. And
agree. I like that a lot. I like his ability to handle the ball like that. That again goes back to my point. Like, if he can handle the ball like that, like let's see you. Let literally every single Duke fan. I'm not a Duke fan, by the way. Every single Duke fan out there is like, please, RJ Barrett, dunk the ball in Luke May's face. Do it once. It needs to happen. Put him on a poster. Like, he has the ability.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know. He just. I see what you're saying. I think he needs to be more aggressive going to the hole, because worst case scenario, he's going to the free throw line. So, and his first step is so much quicker than most of the guys that are guarding him. It's mm-hmm. it's silly, and I think he's going to be able to use that at the next level. And I'm never going to move him off the number two slot in my big board. I just think there's just too much talent there. And I had him one for a while, but then I finally gave into the Zion Williamson hype and swapped him. But I think RJ Barrett's going to be a good pro.
It reminds me of a couple years ago when James Young, remember James Young when he was at Kentucky?
Yeah.
And all he would do is just be super aggressive and dunk on people. Everyone was like, oh, James Young, he's going to be amazing in the NBA, without realizing that he couldn't do anything except be really aggressive and dunk on people. I want to turn, like, push James Young and RJ Barrett into one person and just tell RJ Barrett to dunk on people. Cause that James Young dunk from the title game that year is still the highlight of that whole season.
Yeah. And then James Young would hit the occasional three and you're like, Oh, he's got,
hey now,
you know,
hey there.
but then he gets to the NBA and realizes he can't shoot.
He can't do anything.
He couldn't shoot.
He was so bad.
Except Bill Simmons cheered for him.
Dude, again, we're not going to make this a Celtics podcast. As everyone always gives Danny Ainge so much credit for being a great drafter, let's also not ignore the fact that he took, in a 2-year or 3-year span, he took Juwan Johnson, James Young, and Fab Melo. Like, those were 3 first-round picks by Danny Ainge at some point in the Celtics rebuild. Like, that's just not pretty.
Yeah, that's just awful. That was a bad stretch.
Yeah, not a good one at all. You guys are listening to the Believe in NBA Prospects show here on the Nothing But Net Dash Radio channel. I'm your host, Howard Rubenstein. You can go follow me on Twitter at SportsDean for all your NBA news and coverage. And you can go follow my guy, Michael, at Maximum Hoops NBA on Twitter. Michael, let's get into a couple more risers here.
Absolutely.
One guy, I am officially naming him my draft crush. I'm putting the heart on him. He is my guy. He wins the Big 12 Player of the Year, Jarrett Culver from Texas Tech.
I'm going to tell you. We both have a crush because I love this kid.
Every single time I expect him to fall to the wayside, I expect him to be not the player that he's been all year, and he just continues to get better. His consistency, his shot making, his ability to create shots for other people is something that I've seen develop over the course of this season. I want to say this, Michael. I know that people are going to say, like, last year, like, oh, Culver wasn't that good because Zaire Smith took over the team. Jarrett Culver is twice the prospect that Zaire Smith was coming out last season. Jarrett Culver, I don't know why they didn't let Culver run the team last year. Regardless of how good Zaire was, he has been far away the best player in the Big 12 this year. And I, at least in my opinion, he's been the best sophomore in college basketball this year by a pretty significant margin.
Oh, yeah. Those are all across the board. I agree. You're right. I have a man crush on him, too. This guy is just a stud, and every time I think he's going to disappoint me, he doesn't. He had a great week this week. He really did. He has come to play, and I am after the tournament, I always redo my big board and I make a lot of changes. I'm telling you right now, that guy's gonna be in my top five, and I don't think I'm gonna ever take him out until the draft. I mean, the guy is just a stud,
and he has to be,
and he is so versatile. He's such a good defender. He rebounds. He passes the ball. And you're right. He runs the offense. I mean, they come up the ball. They come up the court. They give the ball to him, and then they all get out of the way because he knows what to do.
It's like watching Murray State with Ja Morant, except it's Texas Tech.
Going back to Zaire Smith, Zaire Smith was, I think, a little bit more flashy last year. But Jarrett Culver's, you're right, twice or even three times the prospect coming out. He's definitely the best sophomore. He is a stud. I would take him in the top four for sure.
And also, Michael, it needs to be pointed out, coachability is big with these guys, especially coming out of these big colleges, D1 schools. What Jarrett Culver's sophomore year shows me is that he knew what he could do as a freshman last year, but deferred to Zaire Smith, the older, maybe more experienced player, and allowed himself to develop over the course of 2 years in college under the coaching at Texas Tech. That shows me he's a humble kid who is willing to give it up to an NBA veteran if necessary, and he's extremely coachable. That to me is such an important trait to have. I'm not going to try to comment on Ja Morant's coachability or an RJ Barrett's coachability because I don't have any evidence to suggest one way or another. I'm just kind of neutral. Like, I'm sure they'll be fine. But Culver has shown me a certain level of grit and determination from sitting on the bench, not sitting on the bench, but for not being this much of a factor for them last year when he obviously could be. It's not like the talent just came out of nowhere. He was this good last year, but with Zaire Smith there, with the way that the team was orchestrated, he was okay taking a back seat and waiting for his chance this year. And he's really made everything that you could possibly have made out of a chance to start with Texas Tech.
That's a really good point. And this is another thing going back to why some players just need to go to college. And it has helped him. It has blown his stock up. Sitting behind Zaire Smith, not getting to be the number one guy. But even on the court, and this is my only really knock against him that I've seen on the college game, is that I would love for him to take over a game, like, right away. Like, sometimes he doesn't take over the game when I want him to.
He's very patient, almost too patient.
He's very patient, and you're right. He swings the ball, and I'll be like, why are you swinging the ball? You can take that, dude, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't get it sometimes, but, you know, obviously, and that tells me he's probably coachable because he's probably working the offense. He's probably, you know, they got to set their running, and he's not going to just go take over the game. And then he takes over the game when he needs to. Jarrett Culver has impressed me since the moment this season started. And he has taken over a few games this week, and I think that you're going to see him take over, hopefully. I think they're definitely a Sweet 16 team, could make a run, you know, to the Elite Eight. We'll have to see, but he's going to have to be every bit of a takeover superstar for them to do that, though.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, look, you know, Texas Tech made a run a couple years ago in the tournament. I think it is possible that we could see Culver lead them to another run. But unfortunately, with the rest of that Texas Tech team, there just isn't really a ton else to kind of call home about. Like, the rest of the team is just it's not really anyone that you're going to be like, ooh, definitely need to watch out for that guy. So,
yeah,
I'm not huge about it, but also I think that Culver is going to show up.
That's the thing. They're garbage. So if they play a really good team that can play a little box on them or do a little, like shadowing a second defender on them, they may cause problems. But his passing ability is just so underrated that, I think they're definitely on his talent alone, a Sweet 16 team. But you're right. Getting to the next level, there's no one else on the team that can even maybe, get some attention, off of him. So let's just put it this way. He gets them any further than a Sweet 16 team, it's just going to boost his stock even more.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's get to our last riser here. I'm going to cheat, though, Michael. I'm going to cheat. I'm including two separate people as one riser because I don't think you can include one without the other. But the reason I have them there is because they're starting to play really well together. Rui Hachimura / Brandon Clark is our last riser. I don't know how much of the West Coast Conference tournament you've been watching. They smoked Gonzaga smoked Pepperdine the other day, obviously.
I saw that.
The combination of Brandon Clark and Rui Hachimura has started to become lethal. The way that they've been able to, kind of run the offense through a very interesting post offense, allowing Brandon Clark to be a little bit of a facilitator, allowing Mike Norvell to also be, kind of the facilitator that he can be also at the top of the key. And Hachimura has been on the receiving end of everything. And over the past like five games or so, shooting 55% from the floor. No threes, but 55% from the floor for Hachimura. Brandon Clark has led the team in rebound three of their last five games. The combination of them two, while they boost each other's draft stocks, they are also boosting Gonzaga, who right now, but Michael, is Gonzaga the best team in the country going into the tournament?
If they're not, they're awfully close. Because I'm going to tell you right now, man, you are right. Those two guys are feeding off of each other. And Rui Hachimura, his mid-range game is the best in the game. He is so good inside the paint, either with a little jumper or his little plethora of moves he's got. He is so clever to watch. And I know you're a big Brandon Clark guy, and I'm starting to come I'm starting to come a little bit towards your way. You're right. I've seen the offense run through him. I've seen him be able to do more things. He's rebounding the ball well. He's showing an ability as a 3-4 combo, to show skills that, maybe possibly could play either position. I think – and then their guard play, so good. They're pretty good. And while Hachimura and Clark get the they get the publicity and they get the, the news headlines of you're right, their backcourt is just ridiculous, and I think they're going to be a Final Four team most likely,
depending
on again, their brackets and whatnot. But
I want to see more big games for Gonzaga, especially these two prospects. I mean, it's not like Gonzaga's really had too many big games this year. I mean, the couple big games that they had, they beat Duke by two. But the other two big games that they played this year against Tennessee and North Carolina were two games that they lost, and they're only two losses of the season so far. Now, that was a long time ago, Michael. That was all the way back in early December. So this is a much different team with a better ideology of how the offense works. But all in all, I'm ready for this Gonzaga duo to come to the NBA. I think that Hachimura is going to be one of the most fascinating guys in this year's draft. Because, look, if you can shoot the mid-range at his height and his athleticism, somebody is going to teach him how to shoot threes. It is inevitable. Like, It's not like Giannis, who like can't even shoot from the mid-range. Hachimura can knock it down from the elbow for anywhere from, you know, 13 feet to 20 feet. He's knocking it down. You add, you know, about 6 feet on that, you can start having him shoot some threes. I think he'll be fine in the NBA from that standpoint.
Oh, I think he's going to be a phenomenal NBA player. I think he's, you know, he's not going to be a superstar, but he's going to be a starter, I think, eventually down the line.
I think his peak is Chris Middleton. I could totally see him being that kind of guy.
Chris Middleton.
He's not as long.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that he's an abnormal type of basketball player. He's not a three-point shooter. He's not really the greatest athlete. He doesn't, you know, play above the rim. You know, I mean, he's a good rebounder, not a great rebounder, but he just does all the intangibles, and his mid-range game is so sick. I mean, really sick. He is so good inside the paint, inside the arc.
It's going to sound a little nuts. This is going to sound a little nuts. Don't, you know, people might come at me for saying this. I'm not trying to be, you know, racial or anything. I promise. Rui Hachimura is from Japan. If you have ever watched Asian basketball, Chinese basketball, even the Japanese basketball league, most of it runs out of the mid-range.
Yeah.
So it's very clear the international influence that he has, that has on his game. And it's so interesting watching him because he sticks out like a sore thumb. He's just this massive dude who's taking jumpers from the elbow and hitting all of them. I think he's a fascinating player to watch. I'm excited to see what he has coming up in store for us in the tournament.
Absolutely. And you know what has died? The elbow jumper. So I think
– I know. Bring back the elbow jumper.
Rui Hachimura can bring it back and be successful at it. And you know, I mean, he could probably play the 3 to 4 in the – you know, and a lot of teams are going small now. So he's got – he's going to probably be a bench player the first couple of years, but I can see this guy starting online. There is no doubt about that.
Yeah, I think that he's going to end up being one of the more interesting guys in this year's draft. Michael, we have a couple minutes left here on the pod. I'm going to present to you – a player for a faller might not make too much sense up front, but let me kind of explain. I am putting Grant Williams on the faller list.
Okay.
Most because he has not performed up to a certain level that I wanted to see him against big teams this year. You know, they got roasted by Kentucky a couple weeks ago. They got roasted by LSU a couple weeks ago in overtime. They just lost in a massive.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Save big money on everything for your next project at Menards. Spring is here, making it the perfect time for outdoor projects. Suncast storage sheds are an excellent solution for protecting outdoor lawn and gardening tools. They're easy to assemble, and the all-weather construction provides water resistance and UV protection. Save big on Suncast storage sheds. View our selection of Suncast products today in-store and on Menards.com.
Save big.